don't become the best at marketing and sales, you're going to struggle.
You had a very impressive background. You have like a, it's like a rocket ship.
We went from, I think they were doing like 80 grand a month to all of a sudden we're doing 600 grand a month in 60 days.
You've gone through all the stages from startup to exit and now like coaching and mentor.
I always tell people I'd rather have 10 lions than 100 sheep. You know, that's how I build my business.
As he mentioned, the importance of sales and marketing.
In the last 13 months, we've acquired 6 companies. Our goal is to be at 10 by the end of the year. And then our goal is to get to 20 companies.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
I'm very excited, Victor, to have you on the show. You know, I did a lot of research before we got on. You had a very impressive background. You have like a, it's like a rocket ship, right? Since 2015, right? Since you entered the industry, right? And you've gone through all the stages from startup to exit and now like coaching and mentor, right? One of the things we talked about last week, right? When we talked, is you mentioned the importance of sales and marketing, right? You said that HVAC is really a sales and marketing company that sells HVAC. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. And this is something that I try to beat into my contractors overnight, because at the end of the day, most of them say I want to be the best technician. I'm the best installer. I'm the best this. And at the end of the day, you know, if you don't become the best at marketing and sales, you're going to struggle. But a lot of contractors also, they try to market before their business is ready. And what I mean by that is, you know, they don't have someone that answers the phone. They don't have a sales system in place. So now they spend a bunch of money on marketing. They don't see the ROI. And now they're blaming the marketing agency when really they didn't have their systems and processes in place before they started marketing. So, you know, one of the things I talk about all the time is trying to nail it before you scale it and really put the pieces in place before you go put, you know, what I call marketing is like putting, you know, gas on the fire.
What are the pieces that need to have in place for that to happen?
So obviously, you know, if you're answering all your own phones, more than likely you shouldn't be spending too much on marketing, right? You should be a referral-based business, something like that. That means you're probably pretty small. So you need to have someone that answers the phones. And they also need to know how to communicate, you know, lead with empathy, be able to overcome some objections on the phone. So it's just, some minor training on the phone is something that's vitally important. And then an in-home sales process, right? Like if you're just going out there and you're in and out in 15, 20 minutes, more than likely you're going to struggle. You know, you might be just only selling repairs when at the end of the day, the most important part of your business is the replacement side, right? That's your largest gross profit event. So the most amount of money you can make at one time is going to be on a system replacement. So you have to have some kind of strategy in place to turn those, you know, $2,000 or $1,500, you know, whatever repairs into, you know, system replacement.
That's the thing that I noticed on your website, Absolute Airflow, is that the entry point is the actual repair and also the actual membership, right? It looks like the strategy is basically kind of starting small, right, with the repair and then eventually upselling them to like a membership and you know, that aspect. Can you talk more about that? How you do that?
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that website. I sold that business, you know, a couple years ago and they changed the website. But, you know, with all my business, my other businesses, we're leading with service, with tune-ups is where we kind of primarily lead. You know, we go and get a low-cost tune-up, whether, you know, sometimes we have specials for $19.95 and everybody thinks we're crazy, but we're getting more leads, right? The idea is that, like, you don't make money on the initial service fee, right? So many companies, they want to charge $129 to come out there, but their lead volume goes in half. Right. And they're like, well, we'll get better clients. That's just not the reality. People are always looking for a deal. Right. So we lead with a tune-up offer. Most of our companies year round are running a $49 tune-up. That's allowing us to get in the door. Once we get in the door, our job is to educate customers and, you know, keep in mind, most people, you know, call someone out to their house, even for a tune-up. Right. I always say tune-up is like your car engine light came on and you don't know what to do. You're like, man, I want to figure this out. So let's go get an oil change. Right. And that's kind of what the tune-up is. And that's how I look at it. And our job is to, you know, figure out what the actual problem was. Like, and most homeowners don't ever tell you. So you have to have a process in place that kind of uncovers those things that the customer is really struggling or hurting with. And if you can do that, then you can figure out what's wrong with them. And you can find a solution and kind of fill the gap for them.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. You talked about last time when you first started your Absolute Airflow 2018, you did 5 million in 1 year, right? The first year in business, right? And you call it like the 5 million playbook. What does that playbook look like in terms of, like, as a startup, if they want to start that business and grow? Like, how do they get to 5 million the first year?
Yeah, and this is a lot of what my new book's about. But, you know, the big thing is recruiting. You got to get A players, right? You can't run all the calls. If you're running every call yourself, it's never going to happen, right? You have to relinquish some control, but you have to get A players. You got to get guys that can sell. And then you have to do scrappy marketing, right? Because I didn't start with a bunch of money. And I think I started with like 10 to 20 grand somewhere in that range when I started my business. But I was scrappy. Like I was, you know, first thing I did is everybody's got one of these things and they probably have a lot of people in there, you know, thousands of people over the years that they've accumulated. I went through and I texted every single one of them one by one and say, hey, this is Vic. I just started a new AC business. You know, I know even if you don't need anybody, if you know anybody that might need AC, hit me up. So we started like that. And then from there, we were looking at other ways, avenues. I think, you know, Yelp was one of the first ones that would, you know, get us live. And so right away we got a Yelp account live. We got on the Nextdoor app, Facebook community groups. You know, I was knocking on doors, you know, me and my kids are going out and passing door flyers out. So you have to be really scrappy in the beginning. And then, you know, the leads that you do get, you got to love on them, right? And you got to focus heavily on reviews. You got to focus on, you know, making sure the customer's happy. They want to tell their friends. And really we started from day one, really trying to get them on our maintenance agreement so that we can come back out and have, repeat business. So those are a lot of things that we focused on. And then, like I said, the actual in-home sales process, I went and recruited guys. Like I knew day one that I needed A players so I could focus on the business.
Yeah. And you basically it's more like guerrilla marketing, guerrilla type of marketing in the beginning, right? Instead of focusing on digital ad spend, which is becoming more and more expensive, right? As a lot of competition has entered the market. It's more kind of guerrilla type of marketing, community type of involvement. One of the things that, I don't know if you probably know Alex Ramosi, he released his book, The $100 Million Leads, like book a few years ago. And one of the things that he talks about getting leads, the first thing you do is when you start a business is asking your friends and family just for, hey, if you have, we have a new open business, if you have open for suggestions for any information, we can do it. Like he used an example as a personal trainer, right? First thing he did, just posted on his personal Facebook profile and saw, hey, this is basically, I'm opening a personal training business. If you have anybody who needs personal training, let me know. And Facebook, and that way just starting the business. And he basically did the same thing, right? Before even the book came out, you did the same thing on your own with just text message. What is like, you just basically just reached out like simply, hey, just Victor.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I think my very first customer actually came from a fantasy football league and I only knew two people in the league. It ended up being someone that I didn't know. I'd never met before. It was a buddy of mine he went to college with. Right. So you just never know what the opportunity was, but it's one of those things, like if you're going to have a business, everybody that you meet and know should know you have that business and what you do. Right. And, you know, I always talk about, you know, to my clients is that your personal Facebook page is free. It's a free place to market. And they're like, well, I don't want to bombard my friends. Fuck that. If they think they're bombarded by that, then they're not your friends anyways. And they're not going to buy from you, so they can fuck off.
Yeah.
And that's how I look at it. So like for me, like if you go to my personal Facebook page, you're going to know what I do. That's where I post every day. Everybody's like, I'm posting on my business page. I'm like, no one ever sees your fucking business page. They don't go there. Like the only time you're going to see it is if you're on paid ads. Right. And like, you can build up your personal page and, you know, we're really heavy. Like I'm one of my companies on doing organic social and it's growing, but your personal page, people already like and trust you and they know you. Right. And they might not be the one that's buying from you anyways, because they might not ever use you. But a buddy of theirs said, you know, hey, I need HVAC. Well, I got a buddy, Vic. He has a business and, you know, he's posting all the time. Looks like they're doing great. So like one of the other things that we did when we started was use my personal Facebook page. Every single day I was doing a live Facebook live video talking about the jobs we're doing, things we've done in the community, stuff like anything that we were doing. I did a Facebook live and I was sharing the experience. I was sharing the growth. The other thing that caught on is that like when people started watching those, other people that you want to recruit and hire are watching them too. Because every single employee that you want has a cell phone and they're on social media every day. So if they don't know what you do or, you know, they're not, they people want to go where like the shiny object, right? So like if every day we're buying new trucks and we got a new building and we got new uniforms, like everything that we did, I posted about it and it allowed people to I want to see what he's doing, right? And I think once I got him in the door, my job as an owner was to get them on my team, right? Like I'm in the middle right now. I just bought a business in Colorado 2 days ago and I'm actually recruiting people right now just from my social media. They're like, oh, I follow you. I saw you got a business in Colorado. I'm like, perfect. Let's get you on board. And I'm trying to close those guys right now. So your personal page does matter. Some of you guys that go to your personal page, I don't know what you do for a living. Half of you don't even know you got a wife. I don't even know what the hell you do on your Facebook page. You know, it's like you just post cat videos all day. And it's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah, yeah. It's a marketing avenue tool that you can use. I mean, I actually spoke to like several contractors actually do this where they recruit their salespeople through there, right? And they actually have their salespeople trained where they post every time, like for example, like a roofing company I work with, like they have their salespeople trained up where they, every time they complete a roof, roof on their personal page to have them, hey, we just completed this neighbor's roof. They make sure they tag the owner on the Facebook profile where it actually spreads. So basically it's kind of a network viral marketing where the actual homeowner tags their friends, right? And the homeowner actually sees the friends, hey, I just got a beautiful new roof. Now, hey, I want to see that with ourselves. So that's another way to actually generate more opportunities. We're actually, you know, spending a lot of money. It's just like a training aspect, another channel.
Well, it's the same thing I do with my sales guys and technicians. When they sell a job, they post and tag me on Instagram and I share it. And then they're like, well, I just sold a $30,000 job, right? And someone else, you know, another sales guy sitting at home and doesn't have work and they see all my guys selling every day. And that's all they're seeing, right?
Yeah. And basically what you're doing is also recruiting, not only marketing for your business, right? But you're also marketing internal, right? You're marketing for your employees, right? Like recruiting, right? We talked about the two most important things, right? About like growing a business. You said talent acquisition and marketing, right? The two biggest things you said. How do you recruit people to your team? Like you mentioned social media, right? What are the other things you do to recruit high level people to your team?
You know, you always have to build a business people want to be a part of, right? And you know, I put my dream employee on the board. I said, I want this guy. And I said, what is it going to take to get him? Well, I definitely need benefits, right? I need nice trucks. I need good uniforms. I need leads. I need to make sure that I build a culture that he wants to be part of. And I want and have to have a potential to make more money, right? So like, how do I put those things in place? So, you know, even when I was a brand new business, I think I was only about 5 or 6 months into business. I was able to recruit like two of the top guys in the country. Like they had very decorated sales reps. And the way I was able to recruit them was through my social media. They saw everything I was doing. They were tired of working, you know, corporate, right? They were working at a big corporation and they were making a lot of money, but it didn't make them happy, right? They weren't having fun at work. So we had to create an environment that looked fun when they came in. We made sure that we had all the things that big companies had in place, benefits, 401k, all that stuff, where like I couldn't really afford it at the time. But I knew if I wanted those guys, I had to give them this stuff on this opportunity. So we started putting that stuff in place. Obviously, we started marketing, making sure we had leads. And, you know, sure enough, they started showing. I always say, you know, you gotta build it and they'll come, you know?
Yeah. And how do you build a culture like that actually creates the sustainability, right? A big thing about like, you know, building a business is creating a culture, right? Culture eats strategy for breakfast. How do you build that culture?
It starts with the leader, right? The leader, the fish rots from the head. And how do you feel about it? How much do you communicate to your employees? Like I was an open book and I was very, and I didn't ever really talk about the present. I talked about the future and everybody has to look, we're not much today. Today we're, you know, we had done $1 million our first 5 months or 4 months or whatever it was in business. I was like, we're not much today, but this is where we're going. We are going to be the biggest, best company in the market. And everybody that's on board with me right now is going to have an opportunity to grow within the business and make more money and be a big part of this business. So, you know, just really breathing in just positivity and breathing in like, you know, that there's a future, right? Because people will take less money for a brighter future than, you know, if it's going to be stuck in the same thing they're doing right now. We also had a lot of training, a lot of meetings, you know, and obviously, you know, you got to incentivize your people. Like you can't have A players and fucking pay them like D players. You know, what is your pay structure? What's your performance plan, you know, that's in place that's going to drive them to work harder and want to do more, right? So many owners, they want to have the cheapest CSR, the cheapest technician, the cheapest installers. I wanted to figure out a way to pay my guys more than everybody else. How do I pay them more? And if I pay them more, like what's going to happen for me, right? And so, you know, I actually partnered with a guy about a year and a half ago and we went into this business and this business was nothing, dude. He had 3 employees, but he was in a good market. He had an office. I was like, perfect. I'll come in and build this thing. And I started bringing in A players right away. We went from I think they were doing like $80,000 a month to all of a sudden we're doing $600,000 a month in 60 days. And it's because I brought in these guys and he's like, well, you're paying these guys too much. I was like, okay, so I'm paying my guys too much, but you weren't paying, you guys are paying your guys like shit before when they were doing no revenue, like nothing. The business is dead. Now we're doing 600,000 a month. Would you rather have a little bit less of 600 grand or would you have like to have the, you know, more of 80 grand? And he couldn't really get the concept down. Like he just kept saying they're overpaid. I said, well, my guys are fucking out of here then. So I'm not going to pay them any less than I'm already paying them because they're worth it. And then they leave and now the business is back to nothing and he's making no money. And it's like, some of these guys are just, they're so greedy that they want everything. And it's like, at the end of the day, you can't, you got to to pay people to perform.
Yeah, I think it's a mindset issue with that owner, right? He basically just never envisioned himself growing to that big of a business. I think it just, it's kind of holding him back, right? Just a mindset issue. Like he never like envisioned himself to be that big. And honestly, like that's the biggest thing. A lot of holds a lot of businesses back is the actual the mindset and the skill set of the actual owner, right? If they don't have the skill set or the mindset to grow, they're gonna like they're not gonna grow, right? Because like they don't have the ability to learn more, right? Learn more and actually train up. At the end of the day, like if you're bringing in A players, they're gonna make a big impact in your business, and they should be compensated for that and above market value, right? Typical, like I think an A player earns like 5 to 7x more than a B player, right? So it's worth it, right? And then it makes your life easier, right? At the end of the day, too, it makes your life easier, right? If you have these guys like running for your business, right? So like you talked about obviously the importance of operations, right? And one of the big things you always emphasize is revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, right? A lot of contractors, right, in the space, they're really looking at the big picture number, right, which is revenue, right? How do you get past that in terms of a profitability is more important than revenue? What are the things that need to look for that to happen?
I mean, obviously you got to understand the business and the KPIs, right? So a lot of guys, they don't understand they're underpriced until it's too late, right? So, you know, we really put a lot of emphasis on building a business that, you know, it's a minimum 20 to 25% net profit. And then, you know, and from there, everything else we have to figure out, like how fast can we scale at that profitability? Do I have enough guys that could sell at the right margin? Because just adding guys doesn't help anything, right? I always tell people I'd rather have 10 lions than 100 sheep. And that's how I build my business. Like my Arizona business, we run about $450,000 per head, almost $500,000 per head. So per employee. And some of these companies are running around the $200,000, $220,000, annual revenue per employee. And if you're running in that, you're never going to make money. So, you know, the big thing with us is we price ourselves to where we could be the business we want to be. So, you know, if you want to be a $5 million business and you're a $1 million business, your pricing has to increase. You have to start charging what it costs to run a $5 million business when you're at one, and then you can fill into 5 million. Now, if I want to go become 10, I have to charge the amount of money it's going to cost to be a $10 million company, which means you got to work through your org chart. What positions are you going to need? So it's called expansion planning. So for us, we're constantly always trying to, you know, navigate, you know, what's our next, where are we going? And where we're going is we have to start pricing that way. And then if we can't get the margin that we need to get there, that's telling me we're not ready to grow because we're not able to sell at that price. Therefore, if we get to 10 million, we can't sell at the $10 million company price, then I'm going to be in a bad position.
Yeah. You mentioned the org chart. Like, I'm curious, how does the org chart look different from a $5 million company to a $20 million company? What are the positions that person needs to fill?
You know, there's different tiers, right? There's the 1 to 3 million, the 3 to 5, 5 to 10, 10 to 15, and then 15 to 20. And once you get to 20, you have layers of management in place. And I do try to run my business as lean as possible, right? Like, you know, I try to run sub 10% on overhead, complete office overhead. So, you know, I'm not a big manager fan. I think if you need a bunch of managers, your systems are messed up and your guys aren't properly motivated. But you know, once you get to that 20 million range, and you know, I have a you know, client of mine, and he's in that 20 million range, and now he's like freaking out. And I'm like, look, I told you before you went to this, you wanted to go here. And I was like, these are things you have to learn. You have to learn leadership. You have to learn how to communicate with people. You need to learn how to delegate. So I think once you get to that 20 million, it's really a lot of delegation and trusting your people, but you have to have the SOPs and processes in place for that, or you're going to struggle because there are going to be a million people asking you a million questions all day, and you're going to freak out.
Yeah. How do you create leaders within your team? How do you actually create leadership within your team?
And obviously that's one thing that we talk about a lot, but it starts with your SOPs. Like, you got to have processes in place for them, because, you know, most owners think that their employees should know what you know. And it's like, if they know what you know, they would have their own freaking business, right? So you need to be really clear on what your objective and what their job duties are. So like when somebody comes into my business in a leadership position, we give them their daily, weekly, and monthly goals, and even yearly goals of what they are, like yearly jobs, what they need to get done. And then we really break down what their job is, how they do the job. And what, you know, and then I give them the resources they need. If they don't know what they're doing or they can't figure something out, they can go back and look at it, right? So, and then from there, once I train them, you have to empower them. You have to, you know, you have to let the bird fly, right? You know, some of the guys, like, you know, they say they want leaders and they go out there and then every day they're beating them up and they're not allowing them to do what they need to do. You know, you have to trust your people. And if you're not a trustworthy person, you're never going to have a big business. Just stay running a small shop. It's fine. But like for me, I almost trust people to a fault, you know, but I believe that they can't learn if I'm babying them. If I'm holding their hand all day, how are they going to learn anything?
How do you create the KPIs and metrics within your organization? automation? Is it something internal that you do, or just is it through like iteration? How do you typically do that?
You know, obviously all that stuff has been learned over time, right? Like what's going to drive the business. So like for us, we have our benchmark KPIs. Like if I look at a P&L, if I look at your P&L and I break it down by percentages, I know where you need to be. So if this one's way off, you know, say that your cost of goods is at 40%. I'm like, whoa, what the fuck? How are your COGS at 40%? Like they need to be at a certain point. So it's really like identifying those things that are going to drive it. But it also is reverse engineering what you want, right? So if I want a 25% net, where does my other stuff have to be? Because I start with profit first and then everything else I'll figure out later. You know, I have to start with the profit because this business sucks if you're not profitable.
Yeah, basically what that means, basically profitable. So you have to like get your commission, your payment structure correct, right? Your sales process correct, right? Your costs in terms of the actual physical cost of the labor, right? All those things aligned, right? And then that's how you kind of organize it.
Yeah, and then you obviously have to control call booking rates, conversion rates, all that stuff matters. If you don't know what your average ticket, your booking percentage and your closing percentage are, you're going to struggle as well, because then it's going to tell you how many leads you're going to need to get the revenue you want. You know, and ideally, if we can get our average ticket and our closing percentage up, that's great. But we also have to have the call to the board, so we need to have the booking percentage right as well.
Yeah. One of the things we talked about was AI, right? It's a lot. It's a big topic in this industry, a big topic in home services space. What do you feel like? How do you implement AI for your businesses? I know you have like six companies that are running, that are using AI. Like, how do you implement that for your companies?
So, you know, obviously we've had a lot of AI products and there's so many products on the market and everybody's the best and this and that. And it's just really, you have to really vet the products. You got to really understand that the problem that you're trying to solve. So we're using right now, we use, I think, three or four different, obviously we use ChatGPT and everybody in the business has that, which is, you know, obviously really important. But then we use three different AI services currently. So we have an AI answering service. So, you know, if it's during the day, my in-person people can't cover all the calls, it goes over the AI will answer and book it into Service Titan, right? Or after hours, if they call in at 9 o'clock at night, I have a AI agent that's answering it and booking that call and getting them on the schedule. The AI agent also is analyzing every single call. So they analyze the calls, and if we don't book the call, it's going to analyze why we didn't. And if the AI thinks it's bookable, it will actually call that person back and offer them a discount or promo or whatever it's going to do to get them on the board. So it's really the lead capturing and also speed to lead too. So same thing with like, if you have Angie's leads, like it's all about speed to lead. So I have AI calling that, and that's all through a company called Same Day AI. And then I have another one that I use for my price book and presentation. So there's a company called Set Sale, SETSALE, and they build out my entire price book. I can take all my vendor pricing, drop it in there. The AI will build out all the things that go into that job. It'll get you your right margin. It'll give you all your stuff built out. It'll give you a full sales presentation too. So we're starting to get to the point where I don't have to have high level communication sales guys. And now there's things you have to do to get people to like and trust you. You're not going to just show them a computer and they're going to buy. And that's just not reality. But now it's able to speed up the time it takes me to train someone on a presentation. So now we just put it in there and they can do it. It also, inside of there, I think on that software, we also do like repairs. So it builds out your repair options as well. So like a technician that's horrible at communication could now be better at communication because he doesn't have to communicate. He just shows the customer and AI will actually read the whole presentation to him. That one's been great. And then we also have another one when we do for training. So this one is an in-home, it's called SalesFlow IQ, and it's a in-home recording. So your technician have their phone on them all the time. They push play when they go in the house and it listens to the call between them and the customer. After the call, it's going to analyze it based on the process that I taught it. So did you follow my process? It'll give me all the checkpoints and they hit this. It's also going to talk about how much did they talk versus the consumer. It's also going to talk about the customer sentiment, how do they feel, and then give them pointers on what they could do to actually, what they could have done to actually sell that job, right? So now if we're calling to rehash it or follow up with it, we have all the dialogue back and forth. So we know exactly what their pain points were or what the technician or sales rep missed. And then we also use that to actually train my staff. So we train an AI bot. So just like you're sitting across from me, my technician could be anywhere in the world, put his computer on, and he says, hey, I want to practice on the hardest level. I want to practice against a wife at home, just the husband's not home. I want to overcome all the objections and close the deal. So like they can battle the bot back and forth, and it learns that they have to have the right word tracks, tonality, all that stuff. So it actually trains on them. So, you know, it's always awkward trying to do role play in front of people you know, but when you can sit at your home and you can practice those role play and objections and all that stuff, you know, to yourself, it's just sharpening the tool. So those are the three that we integrated in all of our companies.
I'm curious how you actually implemented it, because like that all sounds amazing, right? But like how, executing and implementation is actually a big part of it as well. How do you actually, like, did you work with a specific company? training? Like, hey, with, for example, the call center agent, right? How do you get it right? Did you actually train it? Like, how does that process look in actually executing that specific?
Yeah, I mean, these ones all specialize in the home service space. So, you know, the biggest companies in the world use them. So at the end of the day, like they've already gone through probably millions of hours of training just from all the other companies that they work with. So like, I'm not trying to bring in and train a bot myself, dude. I don't got time for that. I want to find an industry specific AI that is already trained in what we do and how we do it and why we do it. And that's usually, I want it built by somebody that understands the trades. And those three were all built by real sales guys that were in the field. They were built by people that ran massive call centers, and they were in. And then obviously the training mod is actually taught by me. So we're uploading, that's the only one where we upload all my training into it. So I have like, I don't know, 600-700 different training videos, and we upload it in there, and we build the AI bots based on every department. So we have CSR training, call technician training, owner training. So the owner goes in there and he says, hey, how do I find this? The AI will spit it out to him like, this is what we need to do.
Yeah. So you have your own data to actually feed the AI to actually make it smarter, right? You talked about like how home service companies can benefit from using AI, right? And one of the things that you feel like that I've listened to all other podcasts you say is that companies that are not using AI are going to be left behind, right? What does that look like in 5 years when companies like, hey, they see the AI, but they're not adapting to it? What is that? What are the consequences of that?
One of the big competing factors of a small guy versus a big guy is overhead. So now if I can have a company where I have all the 100 call center reps, that I can cut it down to 5 or 10 because of AI, maybe none, you know, we can cut that down. We can cut down like a lot of the stuff that we're doing manually, you know, from accounting to all this stuff. So like these big $100 million company you can't compete on price with a five man operation. Well, now they can, because now they're drastically cutting their overhead. They don't need as big of an office. They don't need, you know, they don't need as many people. They don't need all this stuff. And now all of a sudden, now instead of having to be double the price, now they're only $3,000, $4,000 more. And now that big guy, if I'm a consumer and I can go with $100 million business, you know, this massive company for $3,000 more, I'll pay the $3,000 more for peace of mind rather than going with a small guy. So I think it's really gonna bridge the gap between the little guys and the small guys. And if you don't do it now, you're gonna get left behind. You're gonna get eaten alive. The private equity is already doing this. They're already investing the money. They already know that human capital is the most expensive part, and how do they eliminate as much human capital as possible?
Yeah. How has marketing changed since you entered the industry, like since 2015 and since you started 2018, Airflow? How has it changed in the last 7 years?
Well, you know, obviously in the last 7 years, private equity's gotten the space heavily. So, you know, that's the number one cause of a cost per lead, you know, and consumers are like, why is everything so expensive now? Well, it's because, you know, the private equities come in and drive up the cost per lead. So like a Facebook lead, we used to be a super targeted lead, right? I can target, you know, a single mother in Westminster, California that has an income over 100. Like it was like super hyper targeted. So your leads are, or, you know, $5-$10 a lead, you're doing great, right? That's easy to convert and higher intention. And now you're just marketing to a broad audience. You're not going to have as high of an intention customer. You can't target them as well. You can't target the credit history. Like that's illegal now. So like a lot of that stuff has changed. So, you know, the cost per leads have gone up, quality leads have gone down. And like I said, the other big thing I've seen over the last couple of years is that everything is so expensive since COVID happened. Like, dude, like the manufacturers are destroying this industry. Like there's no way that their costs have gone up, you know, 100% in 5 years. And that's just reality. Like when people see my, like, you know, what I pay versus what they pay, I'm like, dude, I don't know how you're in business. You know, obviously I have economies of scale, right? I have a large business, and, you know, we're going to do over $100 million in 2026. Like we have economies of scale. We do have more buying power, but some of these small guys, it's the price that they're paying for equipment and stuff, I don't know how they're in business. And so those are some of the big changes I've seen. I mean, everything from that, insurance has gone up insane. A vehicle, I used to be able to get a vehicle for $25,000. Now it's $80,000 for a vehicle. And so I think it's a lot of the startup of a business today. Like I personally wouldn't start a business today from scratch. Like I would go be the number two guy. I'd be a sales guy for a company. And that's just the reality. I can make $1 million a year selling air conditioning, or I could go spend, you know, $500,000 trying to build a business and still not have calls and still like struggle for the food. Because you got to struggle for the first couple of years anyways to build a real business.
So it's gotten basically harder, right? Everything's gotten harder. It's gotten more expensive, harder to market, more competitive, right? I read that since 2022, like according to PitchBook, there's been over 800 private equity deals in the HVAC space. So that's made it much much more competitive in that space, right? So, you know, how do you stand out then in the crowded marketplace? Like, what are the things that you need to do to stand out?
You know, but the big thing is, you know, you got to win the streets, right? Branding. I mean, you can see, like, if you look at my companies, we all have, you know, our trucks stand out, right? So I use, you know, for the most part, we use Dan Antonelli, who's the number one branding company in the market. Yes, I got to spend 30 grand for him to do it. But that 30 grand is actually way better spent than trying to market a shitty brand. If your brand doesn't stand out on the streets, doesn't stand out on your website, doesn't stand out on Google, you're going to struggle with that or social media, all that stuff. So making sure your brand's dialed in. And then, like I said, you have to put a lot of emphasis on, especially when you're in the beginning, you have to do the hand-to-hand combat. You have to go out and meet people and shake hands and all that stuff. So that's important. Creating a proper social media page where, you know, you can, because most of the, you know, I don't really look at like my organic social as a customer acquisition tool. I look at it as a people acquisition tool. So like, what is your online presence saying about you? Like, and really focus on that kind of stuff. And then you got to focus on reviews. And like I said, the other thing is you have to figure out a sales process. Like, that's what I've trained. I've now trained probably 10,000 technicians on how to sell, right? Like, that's my background is sales. I know it inside and out. Like, I can walk into any house today and I guarantee I sell the job. Like, and I sell it for more than anybody else. So you got to really get your guys trained on how to communicate and how to sell it at a high enough margin and where you can actually run a business where they win and you win.
So you mentioned the importance of reviews, obviously, and looking at your numbers. What's the most important marketing metric that you look at as a company? What is the number one thing you look at? If you're trying to spend money on marketing, what is the number one thing you're looking at as a business owner?
It's your ROAS, right? Your return on ad spend, you know, and there are different marketing, right? There's branding marketing where, you know, some of you guys are so small and you're trying to run billboards and all these branding campaigns and that they don't work. Like, you have your money's way better spent in something that's going to be a quickly, right? So we're gonna look at return on ad spend, right? And why does that matter, right? So like, you know, like I do direct mail and people are like, direct mail in 2025. And I'm like, well, I got a 37X return on direct mail for the year. It is my number one lead source every single month. Now, would you trade $1 for 36? Of course you would, right? Now, some of it, like I think anything below 6X are, you know, ROAS on marketing should be cut. Like, I believe in trying everything. And then if I can't get a 6X on it, it's gone. I'm not doing it. So you got to make sure that you understand, you know, you got to track your marketing. And I track my marketing daily, weekly, and monthly because I pivot. You know, if something's not working, I'm not going to keep just throwing money out the window, right? I just had a marketing call 2 days ago with my team. And I said, look, you know, hey, this is getting this and this is giving me this. I'm going to take that money and I'm going to put it over here and double down on the one that's working. So you have to track it. You can't operate like, oh, I feel like it's doing good. Like, if you're operating off feelings, you're not running a business. You're just playing around. Like, you can't do that. So you have to make sure you're tracking the marketing and then double down on what's working and remove what's not working. And it also, not just the cheapest lead. It doesn't have to be the cheapest lead, because if I got 100 cheap leads and, you know, I only sell fucking 5 of them, or if I get, you know, 100 expensive leads but I sell 50 of them, like, that's the one you want to go to, right? So you want to make sure, because your guys will get burnt out. Like, you know, Facebook leads are like, it's like sifting. You got to sift through a pile of shit to find a dime. Right? Like, you know, but if I get a direct mail lead, more than likely, because how we can hyper target, where we're targeting the neighborhoods that we want, the age of the home, how long they've been in the home, their income, all that stuff is going to be, you know, ideas that if those people call, more than likely they have the money to actually purchase the system that I want to go to. So you got to understand who you're marketing to. So like I always say, you have to have an avatar. You know, most people in the home service industry are like, you know, all white people, like, you know, people who have money, right? At the end of the day, like that's you know, what they're looking at. Like, for me, like, I'm looking for a homeowner that, you know, that's been in the house for a couple of years, that, you know, probably not going to go anywhere, in a neighborhood that's anywhere between 1950 to about 1990, because I know more than likely there's a bunch of code upgrades and things like that they need, right? And then also I look at income. Like, at the end of the day, I'm not going to go to a neighborhood where their average income's, you know, 50 grand. I'm going to go to, like, probably, I prefer, you know, middle upper class, you know, or probably middle class is probably the best, those kind of neighborhoods, because that's their most valuable asset is their home, right? And they look at it like they want to protect it. You know, you go to some of these rich neighborhoods, you go to Bel Air, and they don't give a shit. You're dealing with the house manager, and like, they just want the cheapest thing. They just don't care. But some of these people, like, this is their only thing that they're going to have, the biggest asset they're going to have their entire life. We need to, and they're going to take care of it. So it just really targeting the right people.
That's very counterintuitive, because you would expect a lot of people to say, hey, go with the most expensive option, or the you know, the highest class neighborhood, or the most expensive home. But you're saying no, because that they don't really care that much. They really go for the cheapest options. It's actually the opposite of what a lot of people are saying.
Yeah, rich people don't care about their house, right? It's just another thing to them. Like they probably moved, you know, more times than anybody else. The middle class person, you know, moves only like three times in their move house is almost three times in their life, you know, something like that. So it's like, this is their long-term investment, where you know, a guy like me, like, I'll be in a house for a year and I get bored of it. I want a new one.
So basically you're looking for cost per acquisition per channel, right? You're trying to look for 6x return typical, right? And then also you look at the different channels to determine on a weekly and a daily basis which is the best. I'm curious, you said which one did you cut, like you said yesterday, a couple of days, and which one did you double on 2 days ago? Like, I'm just curious, what was that?
I was running some I was actually running some like branding advertising on YouTube. So it was a YouTube OTT, Hulu, Paramount Plus, all that kind of stuff, and it just, you know, we realized really quickly, like, so normally this time of year, it's 110 degrees. Well, we were 75 yesterday and raining, and it's been one of the worst summers we've ever had. So like, I already know those campaigns aren't going to do anything. Now, if it was 110, we wouldn't even be having this conversation, because we know the leads will be coming in. So we had to go figure out, okay, what's working right now? Okay, well, what's working right now is direct mail. Okay, well, let's move more stuff over to mail, or move more stuff over to, you know, texting software, or texting automation, stuff like that. So like, the stuff that's actually converting right now. Now, like I said, you can't predict the weather, right? Like, we can go historically and know where we're supposed to be, but you know, this has been a historically cold summer, and it's been the coldest summer in my entire life in the state of California. We've only had 2 days over 90. They said this has been the coldest summer in over 50 years.
It wasn't like last year was super hot. Like, last year was super hot, I think, right? Or 2 years ago was like,
no, a couple years ago was, but yeah, it's been pretty mild the last couple of years. So like, a lot of the companies here in California are really just struggling. They can't make money. They're just it's just not working for them. So, you know, I feel bad almost.
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned last time when we talked a case study of a client that you took from 2 million to 18 million in 14 months. How did you do that?
It was a perfect storm of us having more business knowledge than anybody else in the market. So, you know, obviously, you know, we went into when I bought into this business, they were doing a couple million a year in a really small town. A lot of their business was new construction. So that's not really, I don't even call that like real revenue, because you don't make money off of it. It's fool's gold. New construction's fool's gold. You think you got this big project, by the time you're done, you don't have any money left over. So yeah, you know, a lot of that stuff, he had the, you know, it was really mom and pop shop. They were off by four every day, didn't work weekends. The market was only 120,000 total people. So like, when I went into this business, I kind of went in like, okay, we'll see what we can do. It was a buddy of mine. He wanted to help. The business wasn't really worth much. And I said, okay, I'll come in and help you, right? And I really quickly found that there's nobody to compete with in the market. So I fucking went all in. So like, I recruited guys from out of state. So I brought in some of my sales guys from different markets, from there, you know, different parts of Arizona, some in New Mexico, guys in California. And I moved them out to this market. So now I have some of the best sales guys in the entire country in a tiny market that no one's ever sold anything to anybody. And then from there, we started marketing, because no one was spending any money on marketing, you know, and we did truck wraps. Everybody that there has white vans or, you know, shitty lettering, you can't even read the vans. So we rebranded. We built a team that people wanted to come work at. And then we started running it like a real business. And like I said, we're the only ones there that answered phones 24 hours a day. We're the only ones that work weekends. We're the only ones that do, like, so it was really a market domination. It was a perfect storm. And, you know, since then we've just kept expanding on it. Like, we have a $25 million budget next year, and we think we're going to hit it in a town of 120,000 people. And there's guys that are probably listening to this that are in a town of fucking 3 million people, and they can't even do a million a year.
Yeah. What I'm curious, in that specific city, like, what was your main lead sources in those city, in that little, because it's probably different strategy in the smaller town versus like a bigger town.
Obviously, you know, the bigger town, the cost per lead's expensive. So you have to realize, like, you're not going to be able to spread your marketing out as much, because Google leads or all that stuff are more expensive. So like, a small town, like, you can do everything. When we sponsor community events, we do direct mail, we're part of the rodeo, we're part of like the chamber of commerce. Like, we, everywhere you go, you see our billboards. Like, we went after complete market domination. Now in the big city, you can't do that. Like, you can go digital, right? You can go digital. That's really where you're going to accumulate leads, and then branding is just going to take a long time to try to brand it and stand out when you got competitors that got 5,000 five-star reviews and all this stuff. So like really getting your reviews up, you know, working on your SEO. We used a couple different things that really strategically grown our Google rankings really fast. So just try to be number one everywhere, but in a big market, you can't do that. So you're having to spend, you get lead aggregators like Angie's and stuff like that, where you just got to get your name out there little by little. So it's just a different marketing strategy. I enjoy the smaller markets because it's easy. It's like, you know, it's like you put a, it's like putting a freaking shark in a pond, right? Like I'm going to eat everything that's there, you know, but if I go to a big city, I'm a shark in a big ocean.
Yeah. Yeah. And you talked about last time you built an automation software called RP1. Like what was the idea and strategy behind that?
Obviously we want like anything else. Like we try to release inefficiencies in a business, right? Like how do I automate my entire business to where there's no human error. And so when me and my partner had set out to build that, we built it for my business because I knew we were, you know, when we missed calls, what would happen with that lead? Well, we never heard from them again. Or if we did, you know, if we had a lead come in at 12 o'clock at night, did they get a text message or what do they get? They got nothing. So we had to fix that problem. We had to put a little chat bot in there so when they communicate to our website and then the follow-up, right? So like, you know, most guys don't follow up and they say they do, but now we've put an automation that we follow up behind every single customer. So we're not losing any of the money out the back door. And we've also used it to regenerate leads. So one of the best lead sources is your existing database. People have already done business with you. So many contractors have a database of 5,000 people they never talked to again. They went out there and they're just waiting for them to call them again. We proactively start reaching out to them and try to book them on services, water heater flushes, tune-ups, things like that. Or we send them promotions or happy holidays where we're staying top of mind. And realistically, text message has a 90%, 98% open rate in the first, I think it was like first 5 minutes, where an email has like a freaking 3% open rate, right? And direct mail's got a pretty like 3-5% open rate. So like you can get into people's hands in the top of mind. Even if they don't read it, they're gonna fucking see your name every time. And so, you know, that was one of the big things behind it. So once we generated a lot of revenue off of that alone.
Yeah, yeah. You obviously you exited your business and partner with the Pulte family. What are the things that you learned a few years ago with that transaction, and how did your life change?
I didn't partner with the Pulte family.
You sold them, right? Yeah.
No, I think you got that wrong. But I sold to a company called Fix It Group out of Colorado.
Okay.
It was probably one of the worst things I've ever done is selling my business. I went into like a deep depression. It was my baby. I built it from scratch. I sold it to the wrong person. They got bankrupted in 9 months, and they ended up reselling it to somebody else. Everybody left. The brand got destroyed, the reputation got messed up. So it was a pretty, you know, if I was to do it again, I wouldn't have done it. But I mean, obviously, you know, it was a blessing too. I was so heavily involved into work. Like I was so consumed by it. I didn't realize it had become like so much my identity, you know, and I definitely love more what I do now. I get to spend more time with my kids. I get to help more people. You know, now my, you know, obviously I'm doing acquisitions and growing these companies like faster than anybody else in the market. Everybody else grows at like, you know, 10, 15, 30% at the most. We're growing, you know, I think we're up like 240% or 300% almost in some of the companies. So, you know, it's allowed me to really use my skill set, but also like it got me, you know, I found out really quickly, I'd rather be the investor than the operator, right? I don't want to be the day-to-day, but like, I want to be, I'm kind of like the puppet master now, right? I'm pulling all the strings behind the scenes and, you know, I'm helping a lot of people become rich. Like my partner in Arizona, you know, when I partnered with him, that business was worth less than $400,000. Now we got a $17 million cash offer 2 weeks ago we turned down. So in 13 months, we went from a business worth, you know, worth freaking 400 grand. Now, you know, he has, you know, $17 million cash. It's completely changed his life.
That's amazing, because if that's really life-changing money, right? It's, if you think about how much money you need to exit and to actually have a really good life, for most entrepreneurs, a lot of entrepreneurs, that's their dream, right? To kind of sell their business. You had like a unpleasant experience with that. That's something that I wasn't aware of. That's something that you don't hear about often. You don't hear the bad side, right? You hear the good side, but you don't hear often the bad side about that whole exercise, right? On that side. But now you're helping people, right? Now you're Profit Rocker Group, you have events going on, and you, like, your life has changed, right? With that approach, it's like more giving back, right? And more mentoring and more acquisition sides. You said you mentioned you've done 6 acquisitions in the last few years, or how many acquisitions have you done?
In the last 13 months, we've acquired six companies in the Rocket Group. We have about, our goal is to be at 10 by the end of the year, of this year, and then our goal is to get to 20 companies in 2026. You know, so that's kind of really what consumes my life, and building my team around me that helps me, you know, acquire these companies and run them and help them the day-to-day and really build out a support system. We partner with smaller contractors, you know, anywhere between the $2 to $5 billion range. The contractor, you know, maybe they're not growing, they're not profitable, and they want to scale. We come in and we partner with them. So I'm not buying them out and kicking them out of the business. They're still going to be there. They still got to run the business, but we're going to literally bring my entire team in to help them get where they want to go. And then we have a goal. Right? Like, you know, some of the companies that we partner with, they want to be 100 million. I said, perfect. That's what you really want. Everybody says that until someone gives you a $50 million check and you're like, well, I don't really want to go do this anymore. I can get out of here. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we believe in scaling with speed, right? Speed and profitability, right? And how do we grow fast and stay profitable? And that's kind of what we focus on in the Rocket Group. And, you know, most of the people that we partner with have a, you know, 2 to 3 year exit plan, right? They want to sell their business in the next 2 to 3 years. And that's really where we make our money. Like, I don't want to partner with anybody unless I can make 10 million. And if I'm making 10 million, they're making more than me. And so realistically, you know, that's kind of what we do. We come in, we help guys that just don't know what to do, where to go, maybe they plateau, they don't know how to get past the point they're at, and we help them get past that point. And then, you know, ideally, hopefully we get to help them exit their business, because, you know, that's how you change your life. You know, if someone gave you a check for $25 million a day, your life is different.
You have a book coming out, Break, 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 September 15th.
Yes, sir.
What is the book about? Yeah, awesome.
So, you know, Break by Break was, you know, really, I didn't really plan on writing a book. I was actually making a booklet of all the agencies and stuff that we use in my businesses to really give people, like, you know, really safe place to go for referrals. Like, I do not refer a single thing. You will never see me refer something I don't use in my business. And, you know, when I started out, I didn't know where to go. Like, I've used every different damn marketing company you could think of. I've tried everything. I've spent tens of millions of dollars on marketing over the last 7 years. And I had to learn a lot of lessons, like the good, bad, and the ugly of marketing, right? And what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, over the last 7 years, I've owned businesses in 17 different markets, and we've exited a lot of them. And so I kind of know what works. You know, what works in Pennsylvania doesn't work in Arizona. What works in Arizona doesn't work in Texas. And it's really understanding all the nuances of it. So when I went through it, I was just going to have like almost like a referral book and explain all the different types of marketing they can do, from guerrilla marketing to everything. And I said, well, why don't I make a book about it and tell the story behind everything, how we got to it, what size business they should be when they use it, and the good, bad, and ugly about it, right? And so we went through, and it ended up being a pretty awesome person. I think it's probably the best marketing book you're ever going to get, because it's actually wrote, you know, not, I don't own a marketing agency, nor do I ever plan to. This is like real shit that I've used that I know works, and I've used it in markets all over the country. So if you're a contractor and you're looking to figure out how to market your business, if it's not in this book, I would be completely shocked. And like I said, I give you all the vendors I use. I give you everything. And like I said, you do with it what you please. I always say, look, it doesn't work for everybody, because, you know, most people aren't hustlers, right? No matter what, you have to still do the hard work. But if you use the stuff that we put in the book, we've seen our companies grow, you know, 200-300% in a year. And that's the reality that's possible. It's just so many guys just don't know where to go, because they don't trust agencies. They don't trust marketers whatsoever. Everybody promises in the world and nobody delivers. So that's why I wrote the book. Like I said, it's wrote by a contractor. I've generated hundreds of millions of dollars for the stuff that I share in that book.
Yeah. And one last thing I want before we leave you out. What do you think a contractor needs to do, and a marketing company, if they partner up, what do they need to do on their end to actually work, have a fruitful partnership? What is the things that they should do, that they should be aware of before that happens?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for an agency, you figure out what their tracking looks like, figure out where their employees live. Like, are they only hiring Filipinos and they only hire VAs and that's all their whole marketing agency? I won't do business with them. What kind of team do you have? What kind of response are you going to get? You know, I always say, if you're going to do marketing, you know, you have, like, I set a reminder every 2 days in my phone that says, text the marketing guy and see how we're doing. So like, stay on top of marketing. You know, I always say the squeaky wheel gets the oil. You know, I had an agency back when I had Absolute Airflow, and I lost $40,000 in 4 days from an agency because they put the wrong Google AdWord. There was a company, I guess there's a clothing company called Curacao or something like that. And somehow that got mixed in my HVAC AdWords, and my phones are going nuts. So I was excited. I was like, dude, our phones are going crazy. I don't know what the hell they're doing. Well, I wasn't paying attention to what those were. They were calling for this company. It wasn't us. And we were hanging up and hanging up and hanging sign up, and I paid $40,000 in Google AdWords in like 4 days. Imagine that happened to your business, right? So really track the marketing, make sure that they have good reporting in place, and they use companies like Searchlight that are going to be able to track exactly where every lead source is coming from. So you have clarity, right? For us, like, we don't just say it came from Google. What Google did it come from? LSA, PPC, GMB, where did that lead originate from? Did it come from social media? They went to Google, then they went to us. So like that allows us to get an idea. So tracking all that stuff really matters. So
yeah, the analogy I like to use is that you're hiring like an employee to your business, and you should create like processes and systems for them. At the same time, you should also hold them accountable and regularly meet with them. It's not a set and forget partnership. It's just not set and forget. You have to actually hold them accountable and see what you're looking at. If not, it's not going to work out. Right. Where do people find you?
You can find me in a couple different places. A lot of people join my Facebook group, which is the Profit Rocket Home Service Group on Facebook. If you go to Instagram, it's Victor, VICTOR _ Rancor, .com, RANCOUR. If you're looking for training and guidance, consulting, you can go to callprofitrocket.com. And if you guys are really looking to scale your business, we have some events coming up this fall. We run masterminds that are not just like coming in rah-rah bullshit. We actually give you tangible, actionable stuff where we actually go through your business and we help you put a game plan in place. So we have a couple events coming up. One's Profit is Sanity, November 14th and 15th in Newport Beach, California. I have about $500 million worth of operators are going to be there with me as well. And they're going to be giving you all the tricks and stuff to implement inside your business to win.
Got it. Thank you, Victor, man. I really appreciate everything. That was really, really great conversation. Thanks, man. I really appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
Have a good one, man. Bye.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.